5 hours was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news headline.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has recused himself from any federal investigation of alleged Russian meddling in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Sessions met with reporters after the Washington Post had reported that as a U.S. senator and member of the Trump campaign, Sessions held 2 pre-election meetings with the Russian ambassador to the U.S. and withheld that information during his confirmation hearing.
The idea that I was part of a, quote, continuing exchange of information during the campaign between Trump surrogates and intermediaries for the Russian government is totally false.
President Trump, who earlier said he does not think Sessions should recuse himself, called him an honest man who could have stated his response at the hearing more accurately. The Syrian military says it had recaptured the town of Palmyra from the Islamic State militants. Statement from the army said the government is in control of the whole city. They took control with the help of Russian air support. Palmyra's recapture marks the second time. Control of the city has changed hands over the year. The Syrian government seized the city from IS fighters last March, only to lose it again in December. Nearly 1 week after Islamic State fighters were driven from the strategic town of Al-Bab, northern Syria is in military disarray, and U.S.-supported factions are fighting each other, with thousands of residents fleeing to havens to avoid the chaos. Turkish forces and the rebels, their allies, drove IS from the Al-Bab last week. This is VOA News. The World Food Program continues to be concerned about getting aid to the people caught between the fighting in Syria and about the shortfall of supplies to those in need who have found refuge in Jordan. Shadil Maghrabi is a spokesperson for the WFP.
The shortfall is basically attributed to the challenges, mainly the crowd control issues. There were some security threats as well, where we had to evacuate and couldn't continue with the distribution. Also, the weather conditions have been really bad. There's been snow, there's been rainfall. So all that hampered the delivery, and staff had to, like the contractors, had to evacuate.
Jordan has been welcoming more than 1.2 million refugees from Syria. With famine devastating parts of South Sudan, aid agencies say an ongoing influx of South Sudanese refugees into Uganda is straining its food resources. That story now from VOA's Jill Craig.
Uganda has taken about half of the more than 1.5 million South Sudanese people who have fled into neighboring countries, as South Sudan has become Africa's largest refugee crisis, resulting from more than 3 years of civil war. As the refugees flee conflict, sexual violence, looting, and food insecurity, highlighted by the recent announcement of famine in 2 counties of Unity State, they're finding that aid agencies are struggling to provide them with enough food in the Ugandan refugee settlements. Charlie Yaxley is the spokesperson for the United Nations Refugee Agency in Uganda.
Well, we continue to operate in a context of chronic, severe underfunding. Last year, the humanitarian appeal for South Sudanese refugees in Uganda.
With thousands of South Sudanese refugees continuing to arrive in Uganda every day, including more than 120,000 new arrivals in the first 2 months of this year, aid agencies are struggling to keep up. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Malaysian authorities preparing to deport a North Korean man who had been held as a suspect in connection with last month's death of Kim Jong-nam, the half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. 45-year-old Ri Jong-chol has been in custody for nearly 2 weeks following the February 13 attack on Kim at the Kuala Lumpur airport. Malaysia Attorney General says the period under which Ri can be held without charges is about to run out, that there is not enough time, evidence to file any charges against him, so he will be deported today. Leading French presidential candidate Marine Le Pen could face 3 years in prison and a $79,000 fine over 3 social media posts Le Pen made in 2015 showing images of a brutal Islamic State killing. Le Pen called the move political. Get more news at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, March 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A Malawian opposition parliamentarian is calling for a mind revolution to fight what he calls endemic corruption in the country.
We are failing to make any progress because it has become endemic. It's like it's been accepted. It's a way of life, and we are tired of it, and we want to put a stop to it.
Lazaro Chakwera is an opposition leader in Malawi's parliament. South Sudan President Salva Kiir declares March 10th a national day of prayer, but a Catholic bishop says he will not attend. We'll examine the issue of women drug addicts in West Africa, and Swaziland's parliament rejects a $1.7 billion budget, saying it failed to respond to the needs of the people.
Each year, budget has not been people-driven. So to say, this time we see a bit of change from the MPs who are calling for a people's budget.
Mpalanda Shwangwe is the Deputy General Secretary of Swaziland Band Pudemo Party. And today is World Wildlife Day, with hope and tragedy in the fight against ivory trade. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The opposition leader in Malawi's parliament says the country needs a mind revolution to say no once and for all to corruption. Lazaro Chakwera says endemic corruption is stifling the country's development progress. In the most recent case of official corruption, President Peter Mutharika fired Agriculture Minister George Chaponda after the minister was implicated in the so-called maize gate scandal, in which the minister allegedly purchased maize from a private company in Zambia at an inflated price. Chakwera accused President Mutharika of handling corruption matters with what he called kid gloves. He threatened recently to lead mass protests against official corruption.
You know, a recent study by Transparency International indicated that our perception index has worsened, and it is really, really serious. We are failing to make any progress because it has become endemic. It's like it's been accepted. It's a way of life, and we are tired of it, and we want to put a stop to it.
Recently in the news was this maize gate. Is that the only thing, or you have any other evidence of this, the prevalence of corruption?
The recent revelations about the maize gate are just an indication of something that's been going on or is going on in other fields. In fact, when I made that statement, I had cited 13 other cases that are somewhat corruption-related, and allegations being made, and these things need to be followed up. And so I was asking the president to do something, say something, act in some way, or we would truly just protest.
Has anything happened since you made a threat?
He has not said anything, but some people naming themselves civil society organizations that we hardly knew about have come out to say stuff that is not even in response to the issues I raised, but we're talking about myself and what kind of person I am and stuff like that. And I'm saying I am inviting everyone to even probe me. This is not the issue.
Yes, so the civil society forum you mentioned, they are threatening that you should be also investigated. Apparently, maybe they just want to find out if you are also corrupt.
Exactly. But Malawians will recall that even before the elections, I was the first to declare my assets. And then after the election, I did the same. Last year, I did the same. And I have nothing to hide. In fact, when I made this statement, I said I'm inviting the Anti-Corruption Bureau to investigate me as well. I just want to have this country run on a clean slate.
The Minister of Information, Dawusi, has taken you to task also on the threat you made. Any response?
Well, he doesn't talk substantive issues, and so I don't respond to just statements.
Why do you think? Because corruption keeps coming up in Malawi. What needs to be done?
This is the problem, and I'm saying we need to draw a line and say enough is enough. We need to make sure that everyone connected, whether they be in the public service or they be politicians or whoever it is, we must all rise up and say we deserve better. We need a mind revolution.
A mind revolution?
Yes, sir.
What exactly do you mean?
A mindset that says we are not putting up with this. A mindset that says this is not a way of life. We deserve better. And change that thinking with action.
Lazaro Chakwera is opposition leader in Malawi's parliament. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lilongwe. Swazi parliamentarians have asked their government to resubmit a revised people-driven national budget today, Friday. This after parliament, in an unprecedented move, rejected the $1.7 billion budget, saying it failed to respond to the needs of the people. Civil society and banned opposition groups welcomed the rejection, saying it appears the lawmakers are finally listening to the wishes and aspirations of Swazis for the first time in the country's history. Umpalana Shwangwe, Deputy General Secretary of Swaziland's banned opposition Pudemo Party, says his party is concerned that King Mswati III could still pressure parliament to approve the rejected budget.
Each year, budget has not been people-driven, so to say. This time, we see a bit of change from the MPs who are calling for a people's budget. That one on its own, we applaud it, so to say. But we still have to see if the MPs, they can sustain that call, which to us as a political formation, we have our doubts if they will stand the pressure or if that motion to reject the budget will be sustained.
Although this is unprecedented, some Swazis I spoke with say that the call for a revised budget to be tabled on Friday, you know, which will address the needs of the people, including potable clean water, feeder road networks, increase of community project budget, an increase in elderly and people living with a disability grant, among other things, it's a welcome development. How are Swazis reacting to this new move by members of parliament?
Swazis are a bit excited about this call because they've always been calling for this attention of the elderly roads and other things. This is what we, the opposition, this is what we basically we've been calling for. So to us, really, it is a plus because it means those people who are in parliament have eventually heard what the people on the ground are saying. But that excitement might be short-lived. I don't see any way how they can revise this budget. For instance, I don't see the call to increase the elderly grants.
I understand your skepticism. However, wouldn't this be considered as a sign of good things to come in terms of parliamentarians looking out for the ordinary man or improving the living conditions of Swazis, of which you and other banned political formations have been advocating?
It is a positive direction, but the biggest question that remains to be answered is, can they succeed? Can they sway the budget to what they think? Because what they are saying is they don't want a new figure, but they only want relocation of the monies. For instance, the issue of Christianity. The government has just abolished other religions to be taught in school. Instead, they are promoting Christianity. And everybody on the streets, we don't see why would they fork out about 20 million to cater for Christianity. And the only reason we have is that they want to misuse that money. So basically, it is a beginning of a bright future. To us, this is yet another proof that system of government can no longer use the one-party system kind of government because, for instance, the issue of rejecting the budget is the first of its kind. So definitely we are looking forward into probably new things to come, but I doubt if they will ever come without any pressure on the ground.
Mphalana Shangwe is the Deputy General Secretary of Swaziland's banned Pudemo Party. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the country's commercial capital, Mazini. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 3rd. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. We send shout-out to listeners on all our VOA affiliate stations around Africa. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. South Sudan President Salva Kiir has declared March 10th a national day of prayer for peace and forgiveness ahead of a national dialogue which the president announced late last year. Some citizens welcomed the declaration, as we hear from Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
In a recorded statement sent to media outlets, President Kiir urged citizens to turn out in large numbers on March 10th to pray for the country, to repent and to forgive each other.
Our time as people who aspire for the common destiny is now ripe to turn to God and ask Him for forgiveness and blessings. We have not been that perfect, and we need to submit ourselves to the Almighty through prayers.
The National Day of Prayer is an American tradition when people of all faiths pray for their nation. U.S. law requires that the president proclaim a National Day of Prayer each year on the first Thursday in May. President Kiir says the National Day prayer in South Sudan will be observed in all states' capitals as a preparation for the start of the national dialogue in March. 24-year-old Apio Kevin Olango of Juba embraces a National Day of Prayer.
We have been going through untold suffering, and it is time we should open up all our avenues for our citizens to dialogue and pray together. In the same spirit, we would wish to ask our diaspora community to pray with us on this day so that we turn over our plight to Almighty God for the better year 2017.
Another South Sudanese youth who prefers to be identified only as James says while he appreciates a National Prayer Day, more must be done to fix the country's problems.
We need to also embark on doing the exact thing that we are supposed to do. I mean, tackling issues to do on the dialogue, meeting the specific target groups so that we can finally realize peace.
President Kiir has yet to announce the start date of the national dialogue. In February, he announced the dialogue would begin sometime in early March. Wake Simon Wudu, VOA News, Juba.
A Catholic bishop in South Sudan says he will not attend the National Day of Prayers announced by President Salva Kiir. The auxiliary bishop of Juba, Right Reverend Santo Laku, says the proposed national prayer next week is intended to what he calls blindfold the international community. Bishop Laku tells reporter John Tanza that President Kiir must first stop his soldiers from killing civilians before organizing any spiritual gathering.
It is a political prayer to blindfold the international community of the atrocities the government has committed against the people of South Sudan. And I think and I believe that some church leaders surely will attend, some definitely will not.
But is the Catholic Church going to attend these prayers?
Well, I, in person, have no proper idea. But maybe my archbishop, if he's well, he might attend. I did not talk to him yet. I don't know.
You have been quite vocal about the situation in South Sudan. So you have been calling the leaders to repent, and President Kiir is just calling for that. Is that a problem?
You know, with repentance, there is need for honesty. He has not admitted the atrocities committed by he himself, ordering the killing and the death of so many civilians. And practically, communities are punished collectively for small things. Villages are burned. I think he's just covering up. He's covering up so many other things. And practically, it is all politics, John.
President Kiir announced that there is going to be a national dialogue in South Sudan in March, and he said before the national dialogue starts, people should forgive each other and open a new page. What is your reaction to that?
Practically, this national dialogue is a mockery. I spoke about it openly. It is a mockery on the death of so many South Sudanese. It's a mockery on the suffering of our people in the camps, in Uganda, in Kenya, in Ethiopia, in Sudan, in the DRC, and in Central Africa, and in the UN camps. It's a great mockery, and I think it seems the international community is blindfolded by this statement. There are a lot of killings. People are not in their villages. The Mali of Eastern Equatoria are not in their villages. The Acholi are not in their villages. The Lamo are not in their villages. The Kuku and the Kakwa and the Pejula are not in their villages. The Sholo people of Malakal are not in their villages. They've been driven away by President Salva Kiir and his group. And practically the people carrying arms, there should be peace first, and these people return, and then we can seek for national dialogue.
Are you going to attend the prayers on March 10th?
I have been praying for South Sudan every day. This morning, in my prayers in the morning, I pray for South Sudan. That prayer called by Salva Kiir, I will never and never understand unless they carry me as a corpse. But I will never attend that prayer. It is a political prayer.
That's right, Reverend Santo Laku, the auxiliary bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Juba, South Sudan. He was speaking with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. The International Narcotics Control Board released its annual report this week with a focus on how female drug addicts are not as likely to receive treatment as male addicts. Pierre Lapeg, the head of the United Nations Office of Drug and Crimes West and Central Africa Unit, talks to Ricky Stryak about some of the specific issues plaguing the region, such as what he says is a dramatic rise in the production and consumption of crystal meth.
They have done a global assessment. They saw that that girls and females are basically one-third of the drug addicts worldwide. And they represent only one-fifth of the people who access to treatment. Avoid the stigmatization of females. Females generally are more discreet than males, so they have problems to knock at the door of a treatment center. Some things which are obviously specific to females, pregnancy. When you are a female addict and you become pregnant, how you deal with that? How you make sure that at the same time you have this pluridisciplinary approach to make sure that you treat the addiction, but you make sure that you save the lady and you save the baby also. What we must avoid above all when we are talking about drug addiction is to avoid stigmatization.
As far as the West and Central Africa region goes, especially when you speak about women addicts, I think there's probably a big social stigma for a woman to admit she's an addict more so than a man. Is there any specific information in this new report about this region that you found surprising?
No, not on the gender issue. The main issue is that in the region, we see it's very difficult to get data. That's the main issue in the region. Because the governments do not have solid, reliable data of what's happening as far as demand is concerned and as far as and supply is concerned. Because you definitely need both. So when you do not have reliable data, it's very difficult to define policies which are actually fully in line with the needs of the country or the region. So in the region, what we know for certain is that basically all kind of drugs, all of them, historically, let's say 30 years ago, it was just about cannabis, okay? Now it's still cannabis, of course, which is grown, trafficked, and consumed in the region. But you also have new drugs, which appear, let's say, about cocaine, which appear, now you have the crack cocaine, okay, and you have heroin, which was not a problem here in the region, but we see more and more drug injectors in the region.
Of Pierre Lapeg, the head of the United Nations Office of Drug and Crimes West and Central Africa Unit, he was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. Today, Friday, marks UN World Wildlife Day, which aims to celebrate and raise awareness of the world's wild animals and plants. As Henry Ritual reports, each year, more species are added to the endangered list, while campaigners warn drastic action is needed to save many from extinction.
This year's World Wildlife Day theme is Listen to the Young Voices, but many campaigners warn future generations may never see many of the species around today because many are on the brink of extinction, mostly due to human activity. That includes the hidden wildlife beneath the oceans, at increasing risk from the huge amount of plastics filling our seas, from microbeads in cosmetics to industrial-scale waste. Louisa Casson is from Greenpeace.
12 million tonnes of plastic is entering the oceans every year, which is about a rubbish truck's worth of plastics every single minute. Plastic is entering every single level of the ocean food chain, and marine creatures from zooplankton up to blue whales are choking on plastics, they're ingesting it and they're getting tangled up in it.
Around the world, the United Nations warns human activity is depleting biodiversity. In many parts of Africa, elephants and rhinos are under huge pressure from poachers. China, the world's biggest ivory market, announced a ban in December on all ivory trade to take force by the end of 2017, hailed as a game changer by conservationists. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa's posting. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with the visit to Nigeria of Ahmed Ahmed, head of the Madagascar FA and the main challenger to the current Confederation of African Football president, Issa Hayatou, ahead of CAF elections scheduled for Thursday, March 16th. Ahmed Ahmed insisted he can bring widespread meaningful change to African football if he unseats Issa Hayatou as president of the Confederation of African Football.
Some of my colleagues in the football want to change. We are a group, we discuss together, I listen, and I answer for this needed. They need someone to stand, I accept to stand. I give an opportunity for people who want to change this, my position. And the first time in our confederation, one candidate have a manifesto.
Ahmed Ahmed, who met with Nigeria's Sports Minister Solomon Dalong, President of the Nigerian Senate Bukola Saraki, and other football officials on Thursday, said African football cannot afford to continue with Asian principles without the required reforms.
Executive Committee keep much power of jurisdictional, or to tell you, or jurisdictional. But the right thing is matter of disciplinary is for jurisdictional, not for executive committee. That's the change we need to do.
Now to Zambia, where the young Teranga Lions of Senegal came from a two-goal deficit in the first half to claim a 4-3 victory over the Amajita of South Africa in the ongoing 2017 Africa Under 20 Nations Cup, throwing Group B wide open. The Teranga Lions go top of the log on 4 points, while South Africa and Cameroon are tied in the second place on 3 points. Cameroon picked up their first win after thrashing Sudan 4-1 in their second Group B tie at the Levi Mwanawasa Stadium in Ondola on Thursday. The three teams, as well as bottom place Sudan, can all still qualify for the semifinals ahead of the final round of matches this coming weekend. On Saturday, Zambia and Egypt will square up against each other, while Guinea will face Mali. All the matches will be played simultaneously. And then on Sunday, it will be Sudan versus South Africa and Senegal versus Cameroon. That's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, March 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barty, Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee.
VOAAfrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on VOAAfrica.com.
VOAAfrica.com.
All day, all night.